Rock Creek gently flows through the parkland of Washington, D.C. until it meets the mighty Potomac River in the heart of the federal city. On the other hand, Rock Creek Free Press is a fiercely independent newspaper that's not afraid to print the truth. We print the stories that others won't touch. The 9/11 cover-up, media propaganda, government corruption, state terrorism, and violations of our constitutional rights. The Creek is a completely reader-supported publication. We accept no corporate advertising, no corporate influence. For a free, no-obligation issue of The Creek, just go to rockcreekfreepress.com. If you want copies for your local 9/11 truth group, send your request to editor at rockcreekfreepress.com. Rock Creek Free Press, not afraid to print the truth.
It's just a ride, and we can change it anytime we want. It's only a choice. No effort, no work, no job, no savings of money. A choice right now between fear and love. The eyes of fear want you to put bigger locks on your door, buy guns, close yourself off. The eyes of love instead see all of us as one. Here's what we can do to change the world right now to a better ride. Take all that money we spend on weapons and defense each year and instead spend it feeding, clothing, and educating the poor of the world, which it would many times over, not one human being excluded, and we can explore space together, both inner and outer, forever in peace.
And now, coming to you live from Fort Lauderdale, Florida, in Duluth, Minnesota, Dreaming the New American Dream, with your hosts, Chuck Gregory and Mike Pelichek, brought to you by the Rock Creek Free Press.
It's been another busy week in Fort Lauderdale. Hot weather, major thunderstorms, an approaching storm named Emily. Pretty typical for South Florida in August. Congress and President Obama have been wrangling about money, but we all know how it's bound to end up. The money will magically appear. After all, they can just print more, right? There won't be any cuts in war spending. Pressure on Social Security seems to be increasing. I read earlier that America is actually spreading the wealth up. Well, not the monetary wealth. Well, they do that too, but here's a quote. Somewhere on this planet, an American commando is carrying out a mission. Now, say that 70 times. That'd cover it for the day. Without the knowledge of the American public, a secret force in the U.S. military is undertaking operations in a majority of the world's countries. New Pentagon power elite is waging a global war. The size and scope has never been revealed until now. Wow. 70 places in the world that we, well, actually, even though I live here in America, I think I'd rather say they in this case. So many places in the world, they are carrying on commando stuff. 70 places. Sounds like Tom Clancy or Ian Fleming stuff, doesn't it? But it's real life. It's bad enough we have 6 wars going on, but special ops in 70 countries? That's just wrong. One more thing that's apparently gotten worse under Obama. Hard to believe things could be even worse than they were under W, but a lot of them actually are. It's frightening, disgusting, and we all need to do something about it. Some people will be marching on Washington in September and October, marching and demonstrating against the war in Afghanistan. Many of them have pledged to stay there in Freedom Square until the United States pulls out of Afghanistan. I'm afraid it's more likely they're going to end up in jail or starving to death or freezing to death or something, but I still, my heart goes out to them, and I hope our listeners will support this effort. The more people that do show up, well, it could be the start of something. We'll see. My co-host, Mike Palachuk, has a new book coming out, Johnny Moon. It's a really good book. I enjoyed it very much, and it's a little bit different from Mike. Usually, his work takes place in the present or some odd future. This one takes place back in 1963. But it's a strange and wonderful retelling of those years with a very new take from the standpoint of some kids in a Catholic school and the people around them, and some very strange events that happen, and I hope you'll all look for it. It should be out in a week or two. We'll be talking about it on the website. It's available for $15. It'll be on Amazon and on our website. If you write to us right now, we can reserve a copy for you. Well, that's enough about that. Now let me turn the show over to my co-host and the writer of Johnny Moon, Mike Palachuk, an American writer.
Well, good evening, Chuck. Tonight we're going to welcome back Sherwood Ross, our radio columnist from Coral Gables, and Ava Bird. She's in Berkeley, California. So we're coming to you tonight from Vancouver, Fort Lauderdale, Duluth, Coral Gables, and Berkeley. And we're coming up soon in a couple months or a month or so to the 10th anniversary of 9/11. And I just can imagine the propaganda plans that are now taking place. It's amazing. We still believe those towers fell down. And we still don't wonder why Bush fought against an investigation or why he would not testify by himself to the commission or why there was no plan at the Pentagon or Shanksville. We don't know what happened to the passengers, why there were so few passengers on the plane, why no Arabs on the flight list, why Building 7 went down as it did and it was not even hit by a plane. There's a list as long as your arm, but you can bet we won't be talking about any of that on mainstream TV or in the newspapers. What they'll do is they'll roll out the fake killing of Osama bin Laden and the glory of the troops killing kids in Iraq and Afghanistan to keep us free as we go through strip searched in airports. We can be detained without reason for as long as anyone likes, and we still torture and do whatever we want, and soldiers who kill are saints to behold. There's a quote, there's a song that got stuck in my head. It's a strange, strange world we live in, Master Jack. No hard feelings if I never come back. And I don't know. It's just kind of, I Googled that to see what the real meaning of that line was. It's a strange world we live in, no hard feelings if I never come back. And I just think it kind of applies to people who are really fighting things as they are and get frustrated, you know. Remember, if you were watching TV that day on 9/11 as it happened, there were quotes from on-site reporters. What they were doing, they were talking about the obvious explosions, not if there were explosions and if they might have brought the buildings down. But when they did their interviews, they talked about what caused the explosions. The explosions were a given, but they didn't know. They were asking what caused them, and that they obviously brought the buildings down. And if you recall, when JFK was shot, if you see the film or the still pictures, the people who were right there, who did not have a chance to get spun because they were right on the spot, they ran towards the grassy knoll. They ran towards the grassy knoll. They didn't run towards the school book depository. But I remember back in my hometown in Norfolk, Nebraska, Norfolk Daily News, it was, you know, to even think of the grassy knoll was heresy. It was always a school book depository. That sort of became after the spin doctors got their chance. And now We don't talk about the explosions. We talk about how airliner fluid fuel brought the buildings down. If you Google Northwoods Operation Northwoods, you can read documents online about how we planned drone airplanes. We planned fake deaths and fake killings, fake explosions to fool us into invading Cuba. Luckily, there was a real president, President Kennedy, who didn't go for it. The American dream, it's time to wake up. You are not sleeping. It's daytime. You look out your window, there's robins, squirrels, and wiener dog poop. It's fair to parley, cloudy. It's all a fairy tale. You are inside a children's book with dragons and monsters and evil kings and queens. You are a character inside someone else's made-up book. How did we come to this? We have fake history. Our junior high and high school history books should be in italics, handed out by the teacher on the first day with a wink. Remember the Maine, Pearl Harbor, Gulf of Tonkin, Waco, Oklahoma City bombing, the moon landing, stolen elections? And to talk about conspiracy or government lying in the United States, it's kind of like being a person who has spent the day upstairs alone writing poetry and imagining him stepping out onto the corner to hand those poems out to passersby. Because we accepted the Warren Commission, we got the 9/11 What Controlled Demolition Commission, and our children will get the XYZ non-investigation by rich people covering up for other rich people commission. The price of liberty is eternal vigilance. Somebody said that, but we have not been vigilant. We've been watching TV. We think the country runs on cruise control, the heavy lifting having been done earlier in the morning by those who gave us the 8-hour day, the minimum wage, ended war. They suffered, they struggled, they died that we might be free. That is where our thanks should go and where our examples lie, not in the military. I believe 9/11 was an inside job. They got the new Pearl Harbor they wanted to invade Iraq and take the oil. The troops are not protecting us. That is someone's spin on the day's news, somebody's advertising slogan, and someone else's sermon. The troops serve the empire. Killing in war and using money for killing is contrary to God's law. And this is not a democracy. It's something other, based on wealth and power and prestige and celebrity. Those in power are not really concerned with the truth. They are really concerned with remaining in power, and anything they do is based upon that. The poor are ridiculed, hunted down in America, the chase sounded by barking pigs on the radio. And that is contrary to the teachings of Jesus. America is not inherently benign. They don't say that in most American high schools and colleges. Most Americans are ignorant of their own history. But if by some fat chance you do find out the truth, the next question hangs in the air. What the hell are you going to do now? So what do? We don't ask questions. We assume Rather, Brokaw, Williams, Lair, Goodman, Jennings, Koppel, Couric are telling us the truth. They are acting in our best interests. They are not. They're acting in the best interests of their own bank account, their favorite lunch spot they love to go to, their employers and their handlers. We let the Bush administration get away without investigating 9/11 until over a year later, and putting through a whitewash and calling that good enough. And so we are at war seemingly everywhere, in the service of rich men and women seeking to become richer, not in the service of single mothers working three jobs and taking their kids to daycare at 5 a.m., or in the service of desperate young people seeking out the military for some perverted kind of hope in life. We need to ask questions. We need to hold signs, sit in congressional offices, pound on missile silos, refuse to pay taxes right, or it will never stop. They did not stop the war in Vietnam because it was the right thing to do, only because they were forced to by good, hardworking people who believed in themselves and each other, who gave themselves a chance to succeed by walking out the front door, holding up their sign, walking out the front door, handing out their poems, holding up their signs, sitting in congressional offices, going to Washington, D.C., refusing to leave. These people who were not afraid are examples. We also cannot be afraid.
Deadly flows through the parkland of Washington, D.C., until it meets the mighty Potomac River in the heart of the federal city. On the other hand, Rock Creek Free Press is a fiercely independent newspaper that's not afraid to print the truth. We print the stories that others won't touch. The 9/11 cover-up, media propaganda, government corruption, state terrorism, and violations of our constitutional rights. The Creek is a completely reader-supported publication. We accept no corporate advertising, no corporate influence. For a free, no-obligation issue of The Creek, just go to rockcreekfreepress.com. If you want copies for your local 9/11 truth group, send your request to editor@rockcreekfreepress.com. Rock Creek Free Press, not afraid to print the truth.
And now, back to the show with your hosts, Chuck Gregory and Mike Palachek.
This portion of tonight's program is sponsored in part by Not Ready for Daytime Temp Service of Tallahassee, Tucumcari, Tulsa, and Toledo. Did you flunk shop? Have you been for decades wary of Basset Hounds and free pizza sample? Are you toppling from the edge of geezerdom? Are you on a downward slide that will only have a tragic end? Is nighttime not only the right time, but also the only time you're legally allowed out of doors? Are your proudest family traditions being unreliable and unwilling to be flexible or a team player? Are you unable and also unwilling to smile when someone says stupid shit? You always give 55%? Do you think references and a home phone number are indeed too much to ask? If you spill cherry Kool-Aid on the kitchen floor rather than cleaning it up, do you place an empty Doritos bag over the spill? Is the best time to call you sometime between never and leave me alone or I will eat you? Well, then you might not be ready for daytime work hours, and that's where we come in. Give us a jingle. We'll find a job that's just right for you. Something that will allow you to exist but not really live. So you can just keep your head above water and are still out of the way because the rest of us think having no gaps in our employment history and sharing coffee with our coworkers to be why we were put here on Earth. Not Ready for Daytime Temporary Employment Services Incorporated. We'll keep you in the dark.
I'd like to welcome our first guest now, Ava Bird, coming to us from Berkeley, California. Ava is a poet who has been with us at least a couple times already, and we're very happy and proud to have her back. Ava has had a busy summer. Maybe she'll have time to tell us a little bit about it. Ava, how are you tonight?
Excellent, Mike. Thanks for having me on the show.
You bet.
How are you doing?
You really have been doing a lot this summer. What can you tell us just a really brief, how much, give us an update of what you've been doing?
Sure. Actually in Venice Beach, California right now. And I just published two books, and they're books of poetry and prose. And Mike is named in the thank yous, as is The New American Dream. So would love to send you a complimentary copy for all your hard work as an activist and other things. And my books are available to purchase. If you go to ompoem.com, which is my website, it's O-M-P-O-E-M, you can purchase copies of my book. I released two. One is called The New Now, and the other one is called Rage Against the War Machine. And I have picked out a few that I thought you and your listeners would appreciate and enjoy.
Sounds good, Ava. Go for it.
Okay. So I'll just go and read. These are short, so I'll just go through and read them and, say a few words at the end. I just wanted to thank you again for having me on the show. I know you and Chuck are doing a great job with The New American Dream, and I'm glad to see the show growing, and just seems like every week it gets better and better. So just wanted to congratulate you on that. This poem is called Mandatory Kale Gardens, and it goes like this. Gail thinks the world would be a better place if everyone just grew kale. Mandatory organic kale gardens in every house in America, replacing forced health insurance premiums with pills to kill us, drills and bills to hit the nail in the coffin. Bury me, please, with my kale, instead of a drill in my teeth and drugs for my heart. Stop. I just want to start my own community garden. Okay, this one is called Chain Letter from Jesus. Sometimes I look around and see stiff white people sitting in pews with stained glass, pasts, and haunted steeples. Sometimes I ask around the temple for a glimpse of God, and all I get is a chain letter from Jesus through email. Pass it on or else. Believe in me or you're going to hell. Okay, and this is from Rage Against the War Machine. This one is called Psychosocially. Pam ponders intensely on her seemingly hamster wheel existence. Wage slaves and caffeine freaks to stay awake. Asleep at a dead-end job to pay taxes on corporate warfare. Aerial bombing in faraway places with her tax dollars. Genocide with her own blood money. Bombs on the other side of the world. On our Mother Earth. Done in the lying name of corporate welfare. God. Oil and the first black president ain't representing but a Zionist pimp and blood diamonds and bombs in the Middle East and beyond. Where's the democracy? The peace and love 60s got knocked up on pain pills, fuck pills and pornographic ill thrills buried in death care from shots and medical bills from pricks and lab psychopaths in white coats. Okay, this is called Profound Supreme Court Injustice. Katie hates and fights the corporate, militarist, prison, pharmaceutical, industrial complex, empire, and thinks religions and corporations should pay taxes and the rest of us should tell the IRS to fuck off and die like a dinosaur. These new Neanderthals are hijacking airways, waterways, and gas bags are the new gospel, you know. So many are over God now. It's a jungle out there with personhood for psychopathic incorporated enterprises and a Supreme Court that should be hung and tried for treason. Okay, this one is called Hemp Salvation. If a broken clock is right twice a day and a broken economic system is right when all its jobs left and went to China, sweatshops and anywhere made in USA, the left is right and the right is insane, it seems, outsourcing, stealing resources, taking away rights of ladies, you and her babies, and the right to grow a plant in your own backyard. Hemp shall rise again and replace born-agains as the way again to salvation. Okay, this one is called Be Careful. Be careful of the car you buy because you might be sleeping in it more than you might imagine. So make sure your seats are comfortable and it doesn't use Exxon or gas from wars or gas coming out of slaughterhouses, screaming out of cow's asses for burger dollars and unhappy meals stealing resources. Okay, this one is called The Homeless. And I believe, Mike, you put this on the email, so some people may have already read this one. But this poem got printed in San Francisco Berkeley's Street Spirit, which is the newspaper that increasing homeless population in the Bay Area sells for a dollar, and it helps them. And I submitted this poem, and they printed it. It's called The Homeless. I have so many mixed feelings about homeless people and the deeper repercussions of free enterprise. Suits and ties disguised as narcissistic me-first vultures picking away at our culture. I must say, though, about the homeless, that more and more I see them camping, napping in the doorways of the banks. Banks like Bank of America, Chase, and Wells Fargo. Well, fuck you and go. These gangsters of money, known as banksters, sleeping with pranksters like AT&T, spying on you and me. And more, I see homeless people on cell phones with funny ringtones sleeping in no parking zones, moaning for a few bones, begging for a free loan, or maybe they just want the cops to leave them alone. These homeless and their carts, pushing and pulling around a life savings. Sometimes they scare me, to be honest. The clothes they wear, the smells they bear. Sometimes they tear my heart apart to see someone else's life so torn apart. And a lot of them are really smart, with warts and all and kind hearts. But let's not get started on the homeless problem, the homeless burden. It's just capitalism flirting. Ouch, it's hurting. So those are my poems for my new books. And if anybody's interested in looking at a copy, please see my website, which your co-host, Chuck Gregory, has helped me set up and has done a great job with being there for me. And just wanted to thank you, Mike and Chuck, again for having me on the show and having the show available every Thursday.
Thank you very much, Ava. And could you tell us the names of the two books again?
Sure. The first one is, or actually it's not really the first one, but The New Now, and then Rage Against the War Machine. And Rage Against the War Machine is the more heavily political rants that I just went through. And, you know, they actually both have a balance of the light and the dark. But, yeah, it's been quite a journey, and I'm out getting them into the bookstores and you know, I'm making it into a fun project.
That is really cool, and you've got a lot of good events, and you're really that's the way to promote a couple of books there. What's the very next event that people can maybe could go to?
I have a show in San Francisco at Cafe Roma on August 19th, and September at the Beat Museum in San Francisco. And I'm getting ready to set up a bunch of shows in Los Angeles and a book tour going up and down the East Coast. So I'll be updating it on my website. And I'm setting up as many shows as I can to, you know, get my books out there and also help to make the world a better place.
You are really going for it. How are you doing the East Coast one? Are you going to drive all the way there or fly there or what?
Well, luckily I have family there, so I will probably fly there, although driving is tempting to take a road trip, but I probably will fly there and visit my family and try to get my books into Wartown, Washington, D.C., and some other places that badly need some radical thought.
Well, congratulations, and keep up the good work, and please keep us informed of what's going on, and you have a good night, okay?
I sure will. Thanks again for having me on the show. It's always a pleasure, and look forward to hearing Sherwood Ross. I always stay tuned and read his articles on global research, and I'm actually happy and honored to share the airtime with Sherwood Ross.
Sounds good. Thank you. Have a good night, Ava. Ava?
At the end of the day, remember that this day was brought to you by Operation Northwoods Spray Deodorant. With Operation Northwoods, the fog hangs in the air long after you've gone. Back a few decades ago, some people in government planned to carry out murders and crash airplanes and have fake news reports to fool the American people into invading Cuba. It didn't happen, only because John F. Kennedy, a real president, was in office. But then the ones who liked the idea of Operation Northwoods killed Kennedy. And now we have fake everything, fake presidents, fake news, and fake wars. Well, the killing and dying parts are real, just that everything else is baloney. Operation Northwoods. It hangs in the air.
This just in, the Fetal Marijuana Syndrome Recovery Workshop scheduled for the library this Saturday morning at 10:30 has been canceled. And announcing the New Court TV show, there is no statute of limitations on slaughter and murder in war criminal court with Judge Hang'em High Lucy Parsons. On the docket for tomorrow's show is Harry Truman and Enola Gay pilot Paul Tibbetts. And Take It to the Beach, new from Bantam Books. Let Me Sleep, I'm Dead, Whispers from Osama. Didn't they tell you? I worked for them so long and they turned on me. I had kidney failure and was treated in a U.S. hospital, visited by the CIA. On TV, that wasn't me. The Bush family, they were our friends. Whispers from Osama, in all big bookstores soon. This PSA is from your county commissioners. Your county fair board is now looking for volunteers for the new water board tank to be used this year as a fundraiser for Head Start Healthcare, bridge repair, pothole filling, teacher salaries, and the food shelf. Members of the National Guard, VFW, Police Department, Sheriff's Department, Republican and Democratic parties are encouraged to pop in and sign up. And this message from your local hometown friendly bank. Work as many jobs as you can. Save for a comfortable retirement. Don't worry about the ones who don't have enough food. Go to church. Sit in your lawn chair for the parade. Stand for the military. Go home and die. Member FDIC. Just in this tweet from the rest of the world to America. Dude, your blinker is on. Nominations are currently being accepted to rename all the places we have named for horrible people. Ronald Reagan National Airport. The 10th Mountain Division Highway, 90th Infantry Division Highway, 173rd Airborne Brigade Memorial Highway, Gerald Ford Memorial Highway, George Bush Intercontinental Airport. If we're going to name things after bad people, then why not? Well, how about Ted Bundy National Cemetery, John Wayne Gacy International Airport, or Jeffrey Dahmer Memorial Freeway, the Charles Manson Space Needle? Rather, here's a thought. Why not name things for good people rather than terrible people? Why not Dan and Phil Berrigan International Airport, Dorothy Day Interstate, the Emma Goldman Freeway? Brought to you by citizens for naming things after good people rather than horrible people. And this from your local public library. There is one Tooth Fairy and one Santa and one Easter Bunny. And there are 900 second in command of something called Al-Qaeda, and we kill him every day that we need to cover up something else we are doing. This message brought to you by your local American Myth System. And we are also sponsored tonight by Greatest Generation Beer, brewed from the finest something-something. Look for the long-haired hippie on the red, white, and blue can, because it's not about killing just because someone tells you to and not being smart enough to think for yourself. It's all about the courage to fight for what is really right. Greatest Generation Beer. It is actually great.
Tonight, I'm pleased to welcome our regular columnist, Sherwood Ross, who will take over and do his thing for the next few minutes. Sherwood, welcome to the New American Dream radio show.
It's always a pleasure to be on here. You know, I want to begin by talking about it was the kind of day that you never forget. My parents and my sister and I were eating our Sunday dinner in the tiny kitchen of our Chicago apartment when the news bulletin interrupted our radio music. The Japanese bombed Pearl Harbor, Hawaii. The fleet took heavy losses. My father said, "This means war." What I remember most about that day was the feeling, how could they do that to us? We never did anything to them. Japan was the aggressor, and its people would pay a terrible price for the folly of their warlords. President Franklin Roosevelt, FDR, is remembered as the man who got America out of the Depression. He was remembered for being a great wartime leader. He made fireside chats on the radio. He inspired trust and confidence. people held him in high esteem. Not so well remembered is how FDR was also a visionary, how he prepared America for the coming war, even though there was strong isolationist sentiment in the country. The fact is, we won World War II because we were well prepared for it. I know. People say, oh, we were taken by surprise and we weren't ready for the war. But the fact is, we were better prepared than most other countries because FDR planned ahead. He had been Under Secretary of the Navy in World War I, and he knew what was needed. In his very first year in office, he began expanding the country's shipyards. He started building warships. On the eve of Pearl Harbor, America had the second largest navy in the world. Only England's was bigger. Japan's Imperial Navy ranked third. Our shipyard capacity was so great. During the war, we outbuilt the Japanese by a factor of 10-1. Well, I know there are film clips that show U.S. soldiers in the late 30s and early 40s training with wooden rifles. But one reason was that FDR wisely sent our best new weapons, including rifles and tanks, to the British, who were actually fighting battles against Hitler and Mussolini in North Africa. Besides, more tanks were rolling off the assembly lines in Detroit. More warships were sliding down the ways at the Brooklyn Navy Yard, in Mississippi, in New Orleans, Baltimore, and the shipyards on the Pacific coast. America proudly assumed the name Arsenal of Democracy. As I wrote in an article for World War II magazine, no country was totally prepared to fight that war. Ask any general, does he have enough of this or that? And you know the answer you'll get. England had a small army, but it didn't need a big one to defend itself because it had an immense navy to guard the English Channel and Hurricane and Spitfire fighter planes overhead to win the Battle of Britain. Germany had U-boats, but no surface navy powerful enough to cross just 25 miles of water to get at England. Japan had a first-rate navy, but its pilot training was so rigorous it was only turning out a couple of hundred pilots a year. During the war, they could not replace their losses, and America's new fighter planes ruled the skies over the Pacific. Japan also lacked a decent tank. The Russians had terrific tanks and a big army, but few good generals. It seems their paranoid dictator, Joseph Stalin, had sent the majority of his own army's best officers to Siberian prison camps. People who claim dictatorships are more efficient than democracies because it's easier for one man to make a decision, they've got to be joking. What happens when the one man like Stalin is nuts? Some critics of FDR say, well, he welcomed the attack on Pearl Harbor, and he allowed it to happen. But FDR did not, I repeat, did not want war with Japan. His top priority was to help England survive. He created Lend-Lease for that purpose. He gave Britain 50 old destroyers they urgently needed to fight Hitler's submarines. And even after Japan attacked Pearl Harbor, FDR did not change his European focus. His strategy was to defeat Germany first. Does that sound like he wanted war with Japan? A couple of weeks after the attack on Pearl, Congress began probing how could the Japanese have made that surprise attack. FDR agreed, have an investigation. By comparison, President George W. Bush had to be pushed into creating the 9/11 Commission after the terrible attack on New York. strangely, he seemed reluctant to order an investigation into the events of that terrible day. Well, unlike FDR, George Bush was not a president to be trusted. It is generally agreed now he lied the United States in the war against Iraq, that Iraq had no WMD, and that Bush made the attack even with impartial UN inspectors on the ground in Iraq telling them they could find no nuclear weapons. This reminds me of how Hitler lied Germany into war in 1939. He said the Poles attacked first. The truth is that the so-called Poles were in fact Hitler's own concentration camp inmates forced to wear Polish uniforms and then shot dead on German soil near the Polish border. George Bush would have us believe that Iraq, with its insignificant military budget of $5 billion and located halfway across the world, was a menace to America when our military budget was $500 billion a year, 100 times as great. Just as Hitler destroyed Poland based on lies, Bush destroyed Iraq based on lies. He launched a war that killed as many as 1 million people, wounded another 1 million, forced 1 million to flee the country. The Pentagon sprayed Iraq with radioactive ammunition that is filling its hospitals to this very day with cancer victims and deformed newborn infants. Would such an unscrupulous president be capable also of attacking his own country? I don't pretend to know the answer to the 9/11 attack, but I do not believe George Bush's 9/11 commission, and I do believe George Bush is the sort of man capable of anything. Perhaps even worse than making war in Iraq is the absence of any talk of restitution. President Obama wants to create jobs for the 10% of Americans who can't find work. What does he say about Iraq's 50% unemployed because of the war America made? Not a word. President Obama is concerned about Americans losing their homes to foreclosure. What did he say about 2 million Iraqis forced from their homes by our war? Not a word. I ask you, if a war is based on lies, don't we owe it to the innocent victims of that war to make restitution? Where is our conscience? Where are our churches on this issue? Do we only think of ourselves? Under FDR, America was the hope of the world. Today, under Presidents Bush and Obama, it is widely viewed as the scourge of the earth. People in Iraq and Afghanistan must be asking around their kitchen tables, just as we asked in 1941, how could they do this to us? When Obama took office, he knew the American people wanted peace. He had a chance to get out of the Middle East. Instead, he kept up the criminal wars in Afghanistan and Iraq, and expanded the wars into Pakistan, into Libya, into Yemen, into Somalia. The man is waging war on six nations, not one of which ever attacked America. So who is the bully on the block? The USA today is the greatest warfare state ever. It is a towering giant in every area of the military. You might say a nation with 1,000 bases on its own soil just wants to defend itself. Okay. But the U.S. has 800 more bases around the world. And what are they there for if not control the surrounding territories? The U.S. also has an army of death scientists devising the most lethal weapons of destruction ever, from space platforms, germ warfare, to nuclear warfare, to electronic warfare, you name it. America's military budget is larger than the next dozen nations combined. Pentagon spending is greater that all the money spent by all 50 states of America for peaceful purposes, the Pentagon is eating 54 cents of every tax dollar. My fellow Americans, the Pentagon is eating your lunch. At home, the plight of America's people worsens daily. The Constitution is being violated by a president who refuses to prosecute President Bush and Vice President Dick Cheney, the men who sent 5,000 Americans to their deaths. The lights of liberty are being snuffed out one by one. This is a process we Americans must resist. We must stand up for freedom. Make your arrangements now to attend the nonviolent anti-war demonstrations in Washington, D.C. next October. It may be your last chance to ring the Liberty Bell. I'm Sherwood Ross. Nobody pays me a dime to write what I write and to say what I say, and I got nothing to sell. Good night to every one of you.
Sherwood, I don't know how to follow that. That was incredible. Thank you so much for joining us every month, and I look forward to the next one.
You're welcome. People want to reach me at SherwoodRoss10@gmail.com.
Thanks again, and good night.
Have a good night.
And now for your third period American history moment. Things that should be, but never will be, mentioned in a United States junior high or high school history class. If Americans knew their real history, rather than the nursery rhyme Disneyland version, George H.W. Bush and George W. Bush would not be able to ride together in a golf cart down the third baseline at an American baseball game to the cheers of the crowd. Rather, they would be greeted with tomatoes, fists, and handcuffs. And that's the truth. Any talk about wackos or conspiracy theories are just smoke screens from the decoder rings of the guilty. You believe them and call the ones crazy who are trying with all their hearts and souls to tell you the truth. The Bushes know it too, and are just pinching themselves each morning, unable to believe they have been able to succeed on monstrous lies for so long. And join us next week on Third Period American History Moment when we talk about naming airports and highways after good people rather than idiots and bad people. Have a good night and sleep tight.
Helen Woodson will be released from prison in September after being in prison since 1984 for protesting against the United States military, and the United States Federal Bureau of Prisons. 1984. How many trips to the grocery store to pick up last-minute things did she miss? How many soccer games? Summer basketball camp? How many Sunday morning Bible study sessions could she have attended if she'd stayed home rather than running off to protest? And what good did she do? What did she change? 27 years. That's missing all the elementary school years, junior high years, high school and college years, marriage, first job, first moves to a better home for some child. She pounded on the lid of a nuclear weapon, the concrete lid of a United States nuclear weapon, designed and built by Americans, paid for by Americans, to kill millions of people on the other side. The ones who invented and designed and built that weapon poured the concrete for the weapon silo, put up the fence that Helen and her friends snipped to get in to try to destroy it. All those people went to those soccer games, Bible study lessons, were on all those bowling leagues and got paid, brought home barbecued, baptized grandchildren. They paid taxes. They did not fight the United States, the United States military, or the United States Federal Bureau of Prisons. In September, they'll walk the sidewalks with Helen Woodson. Helen Woodson will be allowed on the same elevator as they in the same stores. They might stand in the same line waiting to pay for a Snickers bar and a cafe latte. And a few years more, then a few more, all will be dead. If there's a Jesus, he'll come down to the graves and walk with some and hug and smile and wipe away tears. They'll touch the chains and they'll fall away. They'll tell a joke and they'll laugh and they'll walk and then trot and run to join the party. And the others will be left to rot and turn to slime and be washed away by the rising rivers and forgotten. And that will be the end of that.
Well, it's been a long week in Mount Liberty, Nebraska, my hometown. You might recall a while back that Tommy and Johnny have been looking for God. They looked in the church and they looked for him in the old guys at the library and also, well, everywhere. Seems that everyone's got their opinion about where they should look or whether they'll ever find anything or what. Nona the waitress, well, it seems she's thought about this before. And Leland Dupree spent part of his day sitting at the park watching the kids at the skateboard park and writing in his mind the letter to the editor that would set this town on its head. When the ball game activity got going, Leland walked over. He sat on the top row of the bleachers, his back against the railing, eating popcorn, a plastic cup of Pepsi between his knees. Leland Dupree wore gold corduroys and white tennis shoes, pearl button cowboy shirt, and a new cowboy hat. He began his play-by-play as the Robins took infield and the stands began to fill, leaving a vacant halo penumbra around himself. Casey Tanaka, that away, Judson Tanaka to the catcher Johnson. Nice bungle by third-year coach Peters to second baseman Roger Pitts. Over to Knox. Got him! Leland whispered between bites and drinks while fans around cast annoyed glances his direction. Leland leaned to position his pop cup between his feet. When he looked up, everyone around him was standing. The marching Robins had moved into the infield. The band stood at attention as a VFW color guard in center field began to raise the flag. Those who had been hissing through clenched teeth for Leland to stop his commentary now stared at him to stand the hell up for the national anthem. Not wanting to spill his drink and unmoved by the dirty looks, he sat there. The Reverend Jordan McCorkendale and his wife stood to Leland's right as the band played. Jordan slid over to Leland and pointed toward the band. Leland nodded and shoved his hand into his popcorn bag up to his wrist. The minister shuffled back to his wife, muttering to himself and shaking his head. Those to Leland's left and in front of him began hissing like reformed geese. "Hey, stand up. It's the national anthem now, buddy." The members of the two teams lined up on the first and third base foul lines, turned around to observe the commotion in the stands. The two umpires at home plate, their bald heads reflecting the sun, clutched their black hats over their hearts. One turned and motioned to the press box. A few seconds later, Sheriff John Saney reluctantly pushed open the green screen door. He walked from the roof of the press box to the bleachers, balancing on the metal seats to wade through the crowd. Just as the flag had reached its zenith in center field and the band finished and the home of the brave, Saney bent over Leland and commanded him to follow. The crowd sat as Leland and the sheriff navigated around butt cracks and loaded popcorn sacks. Saney waited at the bottom, then took Leland by the elbow and led him around behind the seats. The three old men carrying white rifles walked informally along the center field fence line. The band marched stiffly to the right field bullpen, and the team members tossed their caps into the air as eight football cheerleaders crowded atop the green wooden press box, freed 100 red, white, and blue balloons from gunny sacks.
Nona, the waitress, sat at an empty table, folding napkins around silverware, talking loud over the sound of the industrial dishwasher to Paul the cook. She couldn't see him, but she knew he was there. "Paul! Hey, Paul. You know, Tommy and Johnny have been on this search for God. Everywhere. Every tree, every rock, every treehouse. I've never actually believed in God. My parents were jello blob theory, new age hippies that had my brother and I searching for our spirit animals. That's all kind of silly. I've always found being an atheist very freeing. Life's enough to deal with. I don't want to have to worry about an afterlife, too. My partner's mom's a fundamentalist Christian. He spends hours and hours of every day thinking about some poor guy's brutal execution 2 millennia ago. Worries that me and her son are going to hell. Tells me she couldn't live without a God because what would be the point? But I don't know that living with it is really living. I actually think it's kind of insane. No, I know it's insane. Sure, shit doesn't seem to make her happy or fulfilled. I think atheism, immensely comforting and inspiring and freeing, makes me want to do something fun and interesting every day. Also really wants me to do some good for other people, whatever that means. Because, you know, this is all there is. Good old here and now, being decent to one another, helping each other out, being healthy and happy and safe. Isn't that what everyone wants? Isn't that what the churches, why the churches try so hard to? They want to be happy, to have then figured out and now figured out and the next day figured out too, and then just say, phew, and plop down and be happy. But are we just pygmies out in the backyard at midnight, howling at the moon with all that stuff? Couldn't we just take our bowling balls and our gas grills and fire them up and call that church just as easy? There's a God, well, she would probably just smile and say, that's close enough. I would think so. Wouldn't you?
The next day, Nona stood outside smoking. She caught Sue on her way out the front door after having picked up her paycheck. There's been a lot of people over the years who have believed in God, Nona told Sue. Sue nodded and accepted a cigarette. There's Mom and Dad and Grandma. There's Moses and Jesus. Jesus even thought he was God. And there's been all the church people over the years, and monks and sisters and priests and people who sit in the dark with hoods over their heads their whole lives talking to God. We are all pencils in the hands of God. Mother Teresa said that. Was she just nuts or what? There's Thomas Merton for another one, and Pilar de Chardin, and Bishop Spelman, St. Augustine, 1 million grandpas and grandmas, and Henry Nouwen, the liberation theologians in Central America, and 1 million grandpas. And that's not all, not even close. They all thought about God, talked to God, listened to God, suffered stuff for God. But if there is no God, what was that all about? Just all big kids who believed in the Easter Bunny? Bill Hicks asked why we celebrate Easter with giant rabbits and eggs and chocolate. That shit isn't in the Bible, and yet we hauled up from the basement to celebrate some God rising from the dead and are never, ever really dying. Never, ever, ever. It's a pretty big thing to be making up all that weird shit about. And you know what? If there is no heaven, we will never know. We will never, ever effing know. Sorry, but right? The only way we know is if there is a God and is a heaven. Everybody who dies knows, or they're just dead, but they can't tell us. What about ghosts and the white light of near-death experiences? Ghosts. Did we make them up, too? You ever dream? Those are weird. Your own mind makes up all that on its own, all the speaker parts, acting parts. You and everybody else in your dream. All the sets and scenery, the plot, the rewrite, the subtext. We can make up a lot of stuff, even when we're not trying.
Robert S. Thompson sat on his favorite bench on Main Street, next to the lamppost, next to the stoplight. Everybody's watching, Robert said, watching for Tommy and Johnny, looking out their windows in the bushes, up and down the street. When someone spots them, they run in the house to the phone. I saw them. They were going that way. So they kept looking, Robert said, because Tommy had a feeling and Johnny said they should, but they didn't know where else to look. So they went to swing on the swings at the park. For a while, they rocked and kicked and swang together, back and forth, back and forth. Then they got off rhythm, and they swang like those steel balls on a string or like the legs of a cross-country skier. Back and forth, back and forth. They still talk, but louder, and they got to singing about Dinah in the kitchen and then beer on the wall, all covered on top of Old Smokey. They got dizzy, and they let their feet drag, scuff, till they finally stopped, and the world was back to normal, no singing. One of them got up and began to walk, and the other just followed. They walked together to the school and through the playground, climbing over the monkey bars with their feet pulled up, sweating, faces going red, grunting, because the ground was hot lava. It was. They crossed the bridge over the little river, kind of shaking, stopping like businessmen to throw a few rocks that were there, like a job that needed doing, then moving on to the next thing. They walked across a big mall parking lot, and it took about a million years to even get to where there were any cars parked. They went inside, and one yawned, then the other. They followed a smell to the Caramel Popcorn Palace. Then they began to mosey. One of them started to walk on just his heels. Then they both were. Johnny and Tommy wandered through the sporting goods store, the candy store. They stopped to stare in the window of a store with a stuffed purple Easter bunny and some eggs and Santa Claus reading a long list of names from a long sheet of little paper. They took a long time in the toy section of Sears, touching the Spider-Man, X-Man, and Superman, Batman, crime-fighting team, dolls. Then they each, at the same time, wondered what time it was and if they were in trouble. They hurried out of the store, turned one way, then the other, stopped in front of the store they always stopped at, and decided to go inside to take off the glass lids and smell the candles and touch the baby Jesus manger scene with the horses and sheep and camels, one with two humps, one with just one. And they didn't touch the one because, well, they couldn't reach that far in the back. They went home and ate and slept and looked for their lost toys and out the window. Then something happened. Something big. Well, pretty big. Johnny and Tommy had kind of given up looking for God. Not giving up, not like they said they quit, but like they, well, just hadn't looked for a while. Instead, they played and watched TV and ate popcorn Tommy's mom made, and I heard for a while they were consumed with throwing wiffle ball curveballs. They played on Saturday on the construction site for the new drive-in bank, hiding from each other and Texas Rangers and throwing dirt clods. Then at school on Monday, the whole class and the whole school started praying that a kid in one of the grades who was sick would not die. Each morning, the teachers in all the classrooms asked their children to pray for the poor student who was sick and might die. Went on for 2 days and then all the way to Friday. Then over the weekend, everyone forgot about the one who was dying, but on Monday again, they wondered and asked each other and then the teacher how the sick kid was. He died, said the teacher. But we all prayed that he wouldn't, they said. God had his own plan, said another teacher walking past. Then if God has his one plan anyway, why do we bother asking, said one of the children, who was then shushed by a hand over her mouth by the teacher. But the kid's eyes were still open. And she saw all the other kids' eyes that were open, too, even with a hand over her mouth.
Hey, I'm Tommy. You know me. My mom sang this song to me because she knew I was pretty worried about God. Imagine there's no heaven, she said. But I don't really want to. I think heaven would be cool. Somebody said, just imagine the best thing you can imagine, and that's what heaven is, and that's what you will get. The last thing I'm going to imagine is that there's no such thing as heaven. And I'd like to know that my grandma and grandpa got their heaven. They really wanted it. I'd hate to have to be that when you die, it's just dark. That would be the worst thing. Imagine there's hell, and it is pitch dark, and you can't see anything. And you are stepping carefully with your hands stretched out forever and ever, and there is nobody else and no sound, and you are always just wondering. Oh, I'm going to puke. I know it. Better watch out. I want there to be cool stuff, and everybody is happy, and it's always fun, and there's nothing to be sad about, and it's always nice out. Bad. No hell below us. I'd take that. Somebody said if you're bad, you burn in hell forever. Man, what's forever like? I get dizzy and sick thinking about that. How does something never end? Try thinking about that for more than 1 minute. See if you can. I can't. About 9 seconds is all I can do. 9 seconds is enough to make me puke. Above us only sky. I'm riding my bike over to the park, and I'm going to do one of my heaven things. I'm going to sit by this one tree and look up at the sky with the sun on my face, and I'm going to close my eyes. One, so the sun doesn't blind me, and also because, well, that's just between me and somebody. Hey, okay, see ya. Hey, there's Leland. He got arrested at the ball game for sitting. He must have escaped or they let him go. Hey, Leland, I can do wheelies now. Watch me. Hey, watch me. Watch me. That's the news from Mount Liberty, where all the soldiers are thugs, all the Democrats are cowards, and all the summer help bounty hunters are about average.
We'd like to thank all of our listeners for tuning into our show. We'd like to thank the Rock Creek Free Press for sponsoring the show week after week. We'd like to thank World News Trust for hosting our website. And we'd like to thank Len Osanek, our producer, who week after week keeps us going here. And we hope you'll listen to his show, Black Op Radio, coming up right now as soon as we sign off. Thank you, Mike, and good night.
Good night, Chuck. Stay warm. And good night, Mrs. Calabash. Good night, Todd Beamer. And good night, Barbara Olson, wherever you are.
Rock Creek gently flows through the parkland of Washington, D.C., until it meets the mighty Potomac River in the heart of the federal city. On the other hand, Rock Creek Free Press is a fiercely independent newspaper that's not afraid to print the truth. We print the stories that others won't touch. The 9/11 cover-up, media propaganda, government corruption, state terrorism, and violations of our constitutional rights. The Creek is a completely reader-supported publication. We accept no corporate advertising, no corporate influence. For a free, no-obligation issue of The Creek, just go to rockcreekfreepress.com. If you want copies for your local 9/11 truth group, send your request to editor@rockcreekfreepress.com. Rock Creek Free Press, not afraid to print the truth.